So I was scrolling through Facebook one day, and I came across a meme that a friend of mine posted, and it said this. Oh, I got to turn this on first. It said this. Now, this is a meme of God speaking to people, and God is quoting Gandhi. That's a little hard to follow, I know. But this is what God said, quoting Gandhi. "I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ." And then God adds at the end, "Dude, he was talking about you." Now, you might not be a Facebook person, that's fine. But what if someone said that to you? Over coffee, they said, "Hey, there's this quote from Gandhi I want to read. And then, you know, I think God's saying this to you." Now, how would you respond to that? As far as I could tell, I had a number of options. First, of course, was to just ignore it and keep scrolling. That wasn't going to happen. Not for this time, anyway. I do that quite often, but not this time. I had the option to agree with him and say, "You know, you're right. Those Christians, they're lousy. I mean, they're terrible. They're awful. Look at the stuff they've done. The Crusades, residential schools, on and on. I mean, there's all kinds of examples you could point to of things that Christians have done in history that are awful." So I could agree with him. Throw all of you under the bus. Another option I had was to defend Christians and say, "Hey, look, for 2,000 years, Christians have been on the cutting edge of helping people, feeding the poor, building orphanages and hospitals and schools. You have no idea, man." In other words, I could tell them, "You're wrong." That was option number two. The final one, the option of attacking the person who posted that and say, "Well, you're no better. Who do you think you are? I know you. You're no angel." Right? Attack the person who posted it. I went for a different option this time. And I want to share how the conversation went. So this is what I posted. This is me. I said, "LOL." See, because I'm cool that way, I can use LOL. "LOL." It's only like 20 years old. "LOL, I'm a work in progress, my friend." Now, what did I just do? I said, "You're right, and you're right about me. You're right about me." His response, "We all are. At least you understand we all need to change as understanding increases." I didn't know what to do with that, so I just kept on going. And this was honest. I said, "That quote from Gandhi," and I'd heard it before, and you might have heard it before too, "continues to both make me sad and inspire me to become like Jesus. People were and continue to be drawn to him for a reason." Now, what did I do there? I'm basically saying, don't look to Christians, look to Jesus. And he said, "I agree. I've pulled away from churches mostly because of the symptoms Gandhi points out." This is not a believer, by the way. "It's sad because the teachings of Jesus were and are so clear." I responded to that with, "I understand. I hope one day you can look past the failings of people like me and join us in our journey to become more like him." Again, pointing him to Jesus. He said, "Actually, you were and are a bright star in my faith journey. I'm sad because it was like the night sky in the city, mostly black." And I just finished with, "Still on your team." Left it at that. Now, I give you that example not to say, "Oh my, what a great guy I am." I really do believe this was God just working through me to give this person grace. He deserved probably to be lambasted and corrected. It's probably what he deserved because he was being really, really bigoted at that point. Really, really judgmental of all Christians of all ages. At all times. That's a pretty wide brush. But to give someone like that grace, to keep the drawbridge down, to let them come across, is something that only God could do. And this is what grace is all about. It's kindness that we did not earn, that we do not deserve. And this series is called If You Want Good Friends. And if you want good friends, grace has got to be a part of any relationship. It doesn't matter if it's with your children, if it's with your spouse, your friends, your siblings. Grace has to be part of it. See, we don't really want a fair world. Could you imagine living in a fair world? We often say, life's not fair. Yeah, well, we kind of want it that way. Because could you imagine if you only got what you deserved? And you were punished for every wrong thing that you did. That's fair, right? That's totally fair. But we need grace. Don't you need grace? Undeserved kindness? Man, we need that in every relationship in our lives. It reminds me of a story I read in the news last year, last summer, in July of 2018. You might have read about some of the fires in California that were going on. And one particular fire near Redding started with someone hauling a trailer. Did you read about this? They were hauling a trailer, and the trailer had a flat tire. And the tire blew, and the rim hit the asphalt and created sparks along the road and along Highway 299. And it started this massive wildfire that destroyed many homes and killed 7 people. Now, for those of you who don't know, I come from Slave Lake, where a third of the town burned down in 2011. The cause of the fire was determined to be intentional, but there was concern amongst the people in the town that we kind of really don't want to know who started it, because we knew people don't want justice. They want revenge. And we couldn't imagine what it would be like. But in this case, though, the people who started it was clear. There was no hiding it. It was obvious who started it. And what's going to happen? Well, a woman named Rachel Pilley had this idea that she wrote a letter to the people who started the fire. It was a letter of kindness and support, saying, you know, it's not your fault. We understand. We don't blame you. It's okay. Keep in mind, 7 people died. After that letter, 300 other people were inspired by that example and also wrote letters of support to the people who started the fire. That, my friends, that's grace. It was undeserved. Did they deserve to have those letters of support written? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. They could have been insulted, blamed. They could have people could have demanded repayment or revenge. Instead, Rachel Pilley and the other people like her extended grace. Isn't grace beautiful? Oh, man. And there's this great example in the Bible. I mean, there's all kinds of examples in the Bible about grace, but I want to focus on one relationship in particular, and we are going to see that relationship depth requires grace. And I want to show you how grace can help your relationships go deeper than they are now. Your marriages, your friendships, your family relationships, they can all go deeper with grace. And we're going to talk this morning about a relationship between two very special people, David and Jonathan. For those of you who aren't familiar with this story, David is David and Goliath famous. If you've heard the story of David and Goliath, same guy. And most people, if they're reading the Bible, they get to that story and they stop. What I'm going to talk about is what happens after David and Goliath, because something really unique happens. And we're going to see in this relationship how Jonathan, who happens to be the king's kid, Saul's kid, shows David 5 different kinds of grace. 5 different kinds of grace that you and I can show other people that will change the nature of our relationships. If you want relationship depth, Pay attention to these five. There's all probably lots of kinds, but this, just this one story has five, and I want to bring this to you. I'm really excited about this. Here we go. We'll start the story. After David had finished talking with Saul, so after he had done his bit with Goliath and that sort of thing, he had a little chit-chat with the king, Saul, he met Jonathan, the king's son. There was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David. From that day on, Saul kept David with him and wouldn't let him return home. And Jonathan made a solemn pact with David because he loved him as he loved himself. Have you ever met someone that you just instantly clicked with? You ever had those conversations? I mean, it's really cool when this happens. It doesn't happen very often. But if you've ever had this, this is so cool. When you sit down with a complete stranger and you start talking and you realize you kind of have the same sense of humor and you got a lot of things in common and that sort of thing, that's what David and Jonathan found. They just clicked immediately. And then Jonathan made a solemn pact with David. You got to understand, this is the king's kid. David's got nothing to offer him. David's from a nothing family. He's the last kid in this family. And Jonathan makes a solemn pact with him, a covenant, an agreement with David. And it's an agreement that says, I'm going to stick with you no matter what. This we call, in the five types of grace, the grace of affirmation. It's the grace of affirmation. They shared a pact. Lots of us have fair weather friends, right? And have had fair weather friends. As long as everything's going well, they'll stick with you. How many have gone through a few dozen of those? Yeah. If you've lived long enough, you've had fair weather friends. But Jonathan made a promise, a pact with David that said, I'm going to stick with you no matter what. That's pretty powerful. No matter what, we are going to choose to work things out. And any relationship can have this type of grace. Friends, spouse, family, church, have they thrive on the grace of affirmation. Because you can, by staying together, you can drill that relationship down to the bedrock. When there's grace of affirmation, you know where you stand. Now think about that for a second. In this relationship, you know where you stand. How does that make you feel? It makes you feel safe. It encourages you to be truthful because you know you can totally be yourself and it's going to be okay. They are going to stick by you. When there's not this grace of affirmation, when someone comes along and you kind of don't know where you stand with them, you kind of withhold because you're not too sure. If they really knew who I was, would they stick by me? Just in marriages alone, without the grace of affirmation, little questions can come into our heads. Is my spouse going to stay with me through my times of depression? Is my spouse going to stay with me even though we're having trouble getting pregnant? Is my spouse going to stay with me now that I've been diagnosed with dementia? Unless this is clear, unless this grace is clear and they've affirmed this covenant, this agreement that says I'm with you to the very end, there's going to be these little questions. But when there's this wonderful grace that says, hey, I just want to remind you, I'm with you to the end, no matter what. Oh, it makes you feel so safe. It is such a beautiful thing to give someone the grace of affirmation. And if you haven't done that, please do so. It's a beautiful gift that you can give someone. And why did Jonathan do this to David? It says because he loved him. Love makes you do crazy things like stick by someone to the very end. It's marvelous. And you know what? In churches run the same way. I think church membership works so much like this, where it's an opportunity. Church membership's not a biblical thing. It's kind of forced upon us from the government to have members in the church and that sort of thing. But it's an opportunity for someone to come and say, what is biblical, and that is, I am devoted to you. We're not always going to agree. I'm not always going to like what you do. But I'm choosing to stick with you. That is the grace of affirmation. And that's what happens during membership. It says, I'm with you to the very end. You know, can you imagine a gathering of believers where every single person has a foot out the door? Can I be really, really honest? There are people in this room who are one comment away from never coming here again. I bear that. They are one decision away from never coming here again. Some have a more baseball theology. Three strikes and you're out. But the grace of affirmation says, you know what? We're going to disagree on a lot of things. But we love Jesus together. And we're going to serve him till the very end together. That's the grace of affirmation. Churches thrive on this. Marriages thrive on this. Friendships thrive on this. Relationship depth requires grace. Second thing. Second type of grace is the grace of generosity. Watch this now. Jonathan sealed the pact. Remember, he made this agreement, right? He sealed the pact by taking off his robe and giving it to David, together with his tunic, sword, bow, and belt. Now, it's not unusual in those days to seal a deal with a piece of clothing. It's really weird in our time. You know, I promise I'll go get milk. Here's my shoe. We don't do that. But of course, back in those days, a piece of clothing was really valuable. It showed your commitment. They didn't have a closet full of clothes like we do today. Sometimes what they had was all they had. Now, this is the king's son, so probably he had a few changes of clothes. But the thing that struck me when I read this, he didn't give him a piece of clothing, did he? It says he gave him his robe, his tunic, his sword, bow, and belt. I'm thinking, Jonathan, were you down to the Fruit of the Looms there or what, dude? Like, did you leave anything? But he was showing, I am completely committed. I am generous. This is a gift. And by the way, keep in mind, this is the king's kid. This was no Walmart special stuff, right? This was the highest quality of every one of these things. It was a beautiful gift that he gave to his friend. This is generosity. Every relationship requires this grace, generosity. Where there are no ledgers, no balance sheets, you're not going to get an e-bill for kindness. There is a natural dance in every solid relationship of giving and receiving. He's saying, Jonathan was saying, what is mine is yours. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, marriage vows sort of work along those lines. What is mine is yours. What is yours is mine. But at friendships can work the same way. Hey, you have access to my fridge at any time. Come on in. The front door key is such and such a place, and you just help yourself. That's a really good friend. The gift of generosity can come in a number of different ways. It could be giving your best friend the other theater seat while you have to sit next to the guy who smells like garlic. It could be allowing your child to talk nonstop. It could be going to see your parents who are too old to come see you. This is the grace of generosity. Great marriages are a daily generosity contest. They thrive on generosity. And here, Jonathan is being generous with David, and it drew him closer. Relationship depth requires grace. The next one is the grace of honesty. After this, we read the following. Saul now urged his servants and his son Jonathan to assassinate David. Ugh, okay, so things are going south here. David is now the official opposition. But Jonathan, because of his strong affection for David, told him what his father was planning. Tomorrow morning, he warned him, you must find a hiding place out in the fields. I'll ask my father to go out there with me, and I'll talk to him about you. Then I'll tell you everything I can find out. You got to understand what's happening here. Jonathan is committing treason for his friend. At great personal risk, he's being completely honest with David. He could have withheld. He could have said, hey, you know, that's between David and my dad, man. I'm not getting involved. But he was completely honest. And you know what? In any great relationship, there is the grace of honesty. Not just about treasonous stuff, I hope. But you know what you're actually thinking, what you're actually feeling. If you've ever tried to have a relationship with someone where you're guessing what they're thinking, what they're feeling, that relationship will only go so far. But when you know someone is being completely honest with you, no hiding, this is who I am, and that's where a bond can take place. It's a beautiful thing. This is the grace of honesty. Next one, the grace of advocacy. We continue on the next verse. It says, the next morning, Jonathan spoke with his father about David, saying many good things about him. The king must not sin against his servant David, Jonathan said. He's never done anything to harm you. He has always helped you in any way he could. And then I love this next part. Have you forgotten about the time he risked his life to kill a Philistine giant and how the Lord brought a great victory to all Israel as a result? You were certainly happy about it then. Ever talk to your parents this way? Why should you murder an innocent man like David? There is no reason for it at all. Powerful. Again, standing up to his dad, the king, who had the power of life and death, and Jonathan is standing up for his friend. He's advocating for him. Not just when David's around, but when David's not around. This forged tremendous relational depth, where if you have a friend that you know is going to have your back, who is going to point out all the good things about you, not just in public, but in private as well. They will shut down gossip. They will shut down slander. They will risk the disapproval of the people around them and even risk creating a scene, if they have to, in your defense. That is the grace of advocacy. Do you have people in your life you know will have your back? That will defend you, will even make a scene, will even risk in order to defend your honor? If you do, you are truly blessed by a tremendous grace called advocacy. Relationship depth requires grace. And finally, the last one, the grace of assistance. It says, David now fled. See, things have really gone bad. David now fled from Naoth and Ramah and found Jonathan. And he's going to do a little complaining, I think justifiably so. What have I done? He exclaimed. What is my crime? How have I offended your father so that he is so determined to kill me? What is Jonathan's response? Oh, I should have given you that. Tell me what I can do to help you. I'm here to serve you. Tell me what you need. That is the grace of assistance. There was a threat, and Jonathan offered to help. Again, at great personal risk to himself. And we all need people in our lives who will come alongside of us and help. I have had so many times in my life where I have no idea what to do. Sometimes it's simple things, you know, like, I shouldn't say too simple, but, you know, plumbing issues, mechanical issues, carpentry issues. I am terrible at those things. Terrible. If you know me, you already know this. Terrible. Sometimes I don't know what I'm doing as a pastor either. And I need people to come along and help me. And there's one thing between someone who comes along and said, sure hope that works out for you, buddy. and someone who says, what can I do to help you? The people who say, what can I do to help you? There's an immediate bond because I've just received grace. I didn't deserve that. I didn't earn that. They just offered it. That's the grace of assistance. Do you have people in your life, your life, who's come alongside of you when you didn't know what to do? And they said those very words, tell me what I can do to help you. Then you have received grace. An incredible grace. You did not earn that. They're just giving that to you. They could have walked away. Said, hey, that's your problem, man. But they gave you grace. You know, when I thought about this message, I thought about all the movies and all the TV that I've seen, and it's been a lot. And I thought, you know, the most beautiful moments I've ever seen were almost always wrapped around grace. They're the most beautiful moments of humanity when we see someone giving grace, an undeserved kindness to someone else. Why is that? Simply put, because it reflects our Creator. Now, I have often said that God desires a relationship with us. And if that's true, and if what I've been saying is true, then God should have shown us these different kinds of grace as well. Now, this is the part where you're elbowing the person next to you and saying, I'll bet you he's going to say God already did. And you'd be right. You'd be right. Some of you have listened to me for too long already. Here we go. So, we know the relationship depth requires grace. And here are the five types of grace again, just to review. There's the grace of affirmation. There's the grace of generosity, honesty, advocacy, and assistance. Okay? Keep that in mind. Because we're going to see how God gives each one of these to you. Why? Because God's crazy like some of us. He loves you. That's why he does it. That's why he gives you grace. Undeserved kindness. Now watch this. It answers the question, does God love me? The grace of generosity. How has God been generous to us? These are the words of Jesus. He said, so don't be afraid, little flock, for it gives your Father great happiness to give you the kingdom. Christmas is coming, by the way, for those of you who don't know. And some of us will give each other pen sets and ugly sweaters and all kinds of stuff. And in that, there's some grace of generosity. But what does your Father offer you? The keys to the kingdom. The keys to the kingdom. How much more generous can our Father possibly be to us puny human beings than to hand us a case that says, here's the keys to the kingdom. I want to give this to you. And not only does it doesn't say he gives it grudgingly, like, well, okay, I guess I'll give it to you. It says it gives him great happiness to do this. You want to make God happy? Receive that gift of the key to the kingdom. It delights him. It thrills him. Many of us in this room have already made our Father so happy because we've received this gift that God offers freely, the keys to the kingdom. That is generosity. There's no one in this room who deserves the keys to the kingdom, including this cowboy. God gives it by grace, undeserved kindness. Second one was the grace of affirmation. Remember? Remember that? This is Jesus again. I have loved you. He's talking to his followers now. I have loved you even as the Father has loved me. Remain in my love. I just want to hover there for a second. Because not only is Jesus saying, I love you, and he could have left it at that. And for the Son of God to say, I love you, that's pretty powerful. But he goes a step further. He says, I loved you even as the Father has loved me. Now, this is not just about quantity of love. I want to focus on the quality of what that love looks like. Remember, Father, Son, and Spirit existed before the world began, and they loved each other in eternity. And let me tell you about this kind of love. This kind of love, unlike the love that you and I often have for one another, this love is never moody. This love is never selfish. This love is not plagued by insecurities. It's not shadowed by past hurts. It never fades. It is others-centered. It is humble. It is self-sacrificing. That is the quality of love Jesus says, I have for you. None of us earned that. None of us deserve that. He said, I have loved you even as the Father has loved me. What a powerful statement. If you have your Bibles open, underline that one. You want to memorize that one. For when you doubt, I have loved you even as the Father has loved me, that is the grace of affirmation. Jesus did not need to say that. He chose to say it. He chose to give us that grace. Number three, the grace of honesty. How has Jesus been honest? How has God been honest with us? Jesus says, I tell you the truth. He says that a lot, by the way. I tell you the truth. Unless you are born again, you cannot see the kingdom of God. For those of us who grew up in the church, we can kind of take a statement like that for granted, because we've always known it. But you know what? God didn't have to tell us how to get into the kingdom. He could have shut the doors and said, none of you are worthy. Bunch of messed up yahoos. He says, I tell you the truth. You want to get into the kingdom? This is how you do it. You must be born again. You must be born from within, born of the Spirit. You must repent of your sins. Turn to God, to have Him be Lord of your life. That's how you become part of the kingdom. This is the grace of honesty. We didn't deserve for Him to be so honest with us, to show us the pathway to the kingdom. We didn't earn that. He gave that to us out of grace. Isn't that amazing? And why did He do it? Because He loves you and He wants you with Him. It's the grace of honesty. Number four, the grace of advocacy. How in the world does God advocate for us? Well, we find out, Paul writes in the book of Romans, he's writing to the church in Romans, in Rome. He says, who then will condemn us? Us being followers of Jesus. Who then will condemn us, followers of Jesus? No one. For Christ Jesus died for us and was raised to life for us. And He is sitting in the place of honor at God's right hand, pleading for us. Pleading for us. I have no idea what that looks like. But I do know this. We read, the writers of the New Testament said that the devil, he's the accuser. He's like the prosecuting attorney. He's the prosecution. He's accusing you constantly, pointing out your every fault. And if you're anything like me, you give them lots of material to work with. Who's on the defense? If you're a follower of Jesus, you hired the greatest lawyer you possibly could, Jesus the Messiah. If you do not know Jesus, you represent yourself. You have to prove to God you are worthy. And you will fail. Jesus is advocating for you right now if you are a follower of Jesus. He doesn't have to do that. And you didn't earn his retainer is really, really big. And you can't afford it. He's doing some pro bono work for you. Using some legal terms. I hope I'm not losing you. He's pleading for us, out of grace, out of love. He's pleading for you. The last one, the grace of assistance. There's so many verses I could have used for this. The Bible is filled with verses about how God helps us. But this is the one I chose for a specific reason. Look after each other. So this is talking to the church. This is the writer of Hebrews saying, look after each other, church, so that none of you fails to receive the grace of God. Now, I've read that lots of times, and I didn't get it. At least I don't think I got the full extent of it. But when you really meditate on that verse, it's saying that God is giving us assistance. That's what God's grace is. He's giving us assistance. But how does he do it? Through each other. Through each other. It occurred to me that people who walk away from the church are often walking away from God's grace. Because God shows grace through each other. Isn't that amazing? He's assisting us, and the method he's chosen to use is us. Look after each other. It's no wonder that we have one command in the new covenant. One command. What is it? Love one another. We have one rule. Love one another. The rest of the new covenant, the pages of the New Testament, is all about that one rule. Love one another. Why? Because that's how people receive God's grace. That's how God has chosen to distribute his grace to you and I. Relationship depth requires grace. I want to tell you about a woman named Sandra Mendez Ortega. In December of 2017, so not quite 2 years ago, she was a maid in Washington, D.C., barely making things go, and she decided to try something rather radical, and she stole 3 rings from the place that she was taking care of, worth $5,000. But after taking those rings, she felt guilty and brought them back to the owners. She was arrested and charged with theft. At her trial, she got to tell her story about how she had to drop out of school in the 6th grade, how she already had one child and she was pregnant with another, was currently unemployed. The charges she faced was a fine of $2,500 and 20 years in prison. Maximum sentence, 20 years in prison for $5,000. The jury listened to her story, and as they listened to her story, members of the jury could be seen with tears in their eyes. After all was said and done, they found her guilty. She did it. She admitted to it. They had to find her guilty. There had to be justice. And they fined her a day's wage, $60. And before everyone left, the members of the jury took a collection. And they came up with the full $60 and paid her fine. That's grace. That's grace. She did not earn that. What she earned was a prison sentence. A fine she could probably never pay. That's what she earned. That's what justice would have done. That's what a fairness would have done. But they showed her grace. They gave her what she didn't deserve. They showed her kindness. And of course, this is what Jesus did for us at the cross. He gave us what we didn't earn, what we didn't deserve. He lived the life we should have lived, died the death we should have died. He gave us grace. God has shown us the grace of generosity affirmation, honesty, advocacy, and assistance. And the beautiful thing is, you and I have the opportunity to pass along that same grace to the people around us. If you want deeper relationships, if you want to have relationship depth, it's going to require that kind of grace. And I'll tell you what, it's not natural. We're naturally selfish. We naturally want justice. We want revenge. We want all these things. Grace is supernatural. And it comes only by God's Spirit. And the more we depend on Him, the more grace we can distribute to our spouse, to our kids, to our parents, to our friends, to our family, to our church. The more we depend on Him. It is by His Spirit that we get to distribute grace. If your heart craves a relationship of grace, which is undeserved kindness, there is no greater source than Jesus. Our world, the people that you love, are desperate for God's grace. They are. They're desperate for God's grace through you. And if you want to receive grace, become a top supplier of it. In other words, if you want to have better friends, be a better friend. Be gracious. Be gracious, gracious, gracious. Try to outdo yourself in grace. God has shown us what grace looks like. And we have the privilege of duplicating that for all the people around us. It's a beautiful thing. Infuse grace. If you want to have better friends, become a better friend.